Welcome to Hope Talks, where we share inspiring stories of hope in Jesus Christ. Hope Talks is hosted by Pastor Margaret Michael and Grayson Willis. Join us for uplifting stories of triumph, faith, and the enduring power of Christ's love. Also, if you're in the listening area, tune in to 1470 AM or 102.1 FM WBTX to listen to Hope Talks every Sunday at noon.
Welcome to today's broadcast of Hope Talks. I'm Grayson Willis.
And I'm Pastor Margaret Michael. It's so good to be here today. And really excited about our guest today, Jenny Butcher from the Isaiah House. I believe you just came on as the director.
Yes, location leader.
Location leader. Mm-hmm. See, I should have asked you that.
I've been called manager a few times. You're not alone.
You'll probably be directing a few things. But anyway, as the location leader. So thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here today.
It's been a good conversation already.
Yes, it has.
So why don't you start out today? We want to hear about the Isaiah 117 house, but we also today want to hear a little bit about your story. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll just help the conversation as we go along.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So yeah, just share a little bit.
Yeah. So I want to start off by saying I had not shared my story or my testimony, as most people call it, until my first time was last year on Mother's Day. And it was my very first time ever sharing it. And after that, I told my husband, I said, I'm going to share my story some more one day somehow. I look forward to that day. Yeah. And so working with Isaiah 117 House has been one of those of God provided that opportunity for me to share my testimony, but also a healing journey for me. Yeah. I've healed from this story before, but this is a whole nother level of healing for me. Yeah. So it's just been, it's been really fun going through the emotions again and reliving it and just remembering things that I couldn't remember last year. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it's been one of those fun journeys. But my story is I got connected with Isaiah 117 House due to me growing up in the foster care system. I lived in the foster care system since I was about 2 years old. I was first entered at 2 years old. At that time, we stayed in an orphanage home and my sister was a baby at the time. And so we stayed in an orphanage home. My two older brothers ended up at a foster home. We didn't stay for very long. We were adopted by our biological aunt and uncle and they had three kids of their own. So that was a family really quick. seven kids right there. And that was when I lived in Omaha, Nebraska. Okay. And then we moved to the Fairfax County when I was about second grade. And that's when I entered the foster care system again. Mm. We endured a lot of physical abuse. My aunt was very abusive, just hitting any chance she could get. And emotionally, just the things that were said in our home were just not the best situations. And so we ended up there again. My cousin had endured some abuse from my uncle. And that's how we ended up in the foster care system there. During that journey of foster care, I don't remember so much of that removal day, but I remember my experience in the system. I was the troubled kid. I was the kid that no one could keep in their home. I was very aggressive towards my siblings. I was always angry. I was always sad. There was always something wrong with me. So I was always kind of the kid that got tossed around a little bit because I just wasn't the normal, typical kid that most people wanted. I was a challenging kid. So I lived in a group home for a while. I lived in like a residential place called Child Help, which I think probably helped me a lot. Yeah. I went through anger management. I went through depression. And this was at second grade through fourth grade. My child's in second grade right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my goodness, my heart breaks because I'm like, that's how old I was. Yeah. And I was experiencing so many things that she will never experience at this age because she's fortunate to have me and her father. So then we eventually returned home with our aunt. We weren't allowed to live with our uncle. We returned home with her, all of us kids. My brothers were not allowed to. They ended up returning home to my grandma. And then we moved to Harrisonburg when I was in fourth grade. It's in the middle of my fourth grade year. I get upset because I never got to go to Jamestown ever.
You missed the field trip.
I missed the field trip because they were going. And when I moved to Harrisonburg, they had already gone on the field trip. So I remember moving here because of that. Like I was like, I never got to go on that field trip. So my poor child will have to see me experience that for the first time and live.
At least she could live through her.
I know she's going to be traumatized by all the things I'm doing to live through her. But we moved here in Harrisonburg area when I was in fourth grade. Gas was only like a dollar something at that time when I moved here. So that should tell you something. We kind of lived on the sketchy area of town, not really the place you want to go live in. And we lived there in fourth grade. And my aunt ended up leaving me, my sister, and my cousin with my uncle, who was not supposed to live with us. He ended up moving in and she ended up leaving. Now, she would come and visit every once in a while, but that was kind of towards the end of my fourth grade year is when she left. And I grew up really fast. I say I became a mom at 10. I was the caregiver for my siblings. I cleaned the house. I helped make dinner, whether it was frozen meals or an actual meal. Almost burned down the house by making macaroni and cheese. And I made sure we were ready for school, that we got off the bus. So I was very much a mom to my sister and my cousin. I call them my siblings because yeah. I was adopted. And that was my everyday. And so that is a few months of living with my uncle is when I started experiencing sexual abuse. It started at age 10, and it was a routine every day. I got up, got ready for school. My uncle would leave at 3 a.m. to go to work. So I, again, took care of my siblings, and I would get home, do the same thing, make dinner, make sure everyone was taken care of. And then my uncle would come home around dinner time, eat dinner. And then later on that evening is when the abuse would start. And so I experienced that from fourth grade up until my eighth grade year. So about 14 was when I finally said something. I kept it a secret for that long because I had such an awful experience in the foster care system that I did not want to go back. And I didn't want to be blamed for separating our family, essentially.
A lot of responsibility.
Yeah, I didn't want to be the person, which I did end up taking that blame. But I didn't want to be that kid who separated from my brothers, separated my sister away from me. I didn't want to be that person. And so I kept that secret for 4 years and let the abuse happen for 4 years. Little did I know, my sister was experiencing the same abuse at the same time. And I had no idea. And actually, I didn't find out until later on while we were going through the courts on what was happening and all of that. So that day that I told, it was just a normal day. I want to preface, you would have never known I've gone through this abuse as a school teacher, as a friend or anything, because I went to school every day with a smile on my face, like nothing was happening at home. Yeah. I would not tell a single soul. I would not say anything. It was all a secret and no one would have ever seen it. No one imagined this was happening because I was always the talkative, happy kid who walked in. Yeah. And so that is one thing I always forget to mention that, but that's one thing I want people to understand is that like that kid who's coming in smiling may be going through something that you have no idea about.
So true.
And I was that kid. And so the day I decided to tell what was happening, I was with my cousin who had experienced the same abuse. She had forgiven our uncle, had gone through that and thought he was a good man. And we had an evening of, we were all at the house. My uncle was not there. And she called us ungrateful that evening. And I was just so angry in that moment. And I blurted out what happened. I said, "You call me ungrateful, but yet this is what's going on." And that evening, the police came and we were interviewed. We were spoken to. My aunt came that evening and she didn't believe me.
Of course not.
Mm-mm. She did not believe what I said. My brothers heard. My biological brothers are like my dad's. Yeah. Very protective of me. And so they were not happy when they heard about it. But that was kind of what that evening turned into. It was just, that was it. The police left and I went to bed. There was like nothing had happened. So the next day I got up and I got up like it was a normal day. Got up that day, got ready for school, got my siblings ready, did all of that stuff. And I went to school like it was a normal day. And I get called down to the principal's office. And there's two strangers there. And I'm assuming they're caseworkers because they asked me what I had said the night before. And they tell us that we have to go with them. And I said, okay. I already kind of knew what was going to happen, but I also was unsure what was going to happen. And so they let my sister, myself, and my cousin and I say goodbye to two friends. We got to choose two friends to say goodbye to. And that was one thing that always hits me because it was one of those of, will I ever return here again? Yeah. And so it makes me emotional because it was an uncertainty of what was going to happen. Yeah. And so we say goodbye to two friends and then we go off and hang out at the DSS department for a very long time. We were there from that morning at school, I'd say 8 a.m., maybe 9 o'clock, mm-hmm. until 6:30 that evening. Mm-hmm. So that was a whole day that we were all there. If you ever go to the DSS department, the Department of Social Services, it is not a pretty place. It's just
pretty bleak.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's this room is a lot nicer than that room. And they had nothing there to entertain us. We were teenagers, so not much. We don't need much entertaining, but still, for a whole day, we came with nothing but our clothes that we were wearing and our school book bags. And we were unfortunate to not be able to go back to our home. I wasn't able to go back home and get a family photo of me at 2 years old with my siblings. That photo, I still have the image in my head, and I always wanted that photo, and I've never got the chance to get it back. And a basketball t-shirt I had. I don't know why I wanted that, but those were the only two things I wanted, was that family photo and a basketball t-shirt. And so we waited there all day. I only remember getting Cold Stone ice cream that day. My sister said she remembers pizza. I'm like, I do not remember pizza. She doesn't remember Cold Stone. So maybe we just made up stuff to make the day go better.
Maybe.
We were very fortunate enough to find a family who would take all three of us. One thing I remember saying to the caseworkers, I don't know if they asked us. I don't remember exact. I feel like they asked us this question of like, we can't find a family that'll take all three of you all, but who can stay together, who can't? Mm-hmm. And I just remember saying, if you can't keep us all together, keep the younger two together and just put me anywhere. I was the reason why we were there. So I felt the burden to do that. And so that's what I said to them. And later on, a few hours later, they found a family. I talk to my foster mom a lot. She's my mom. Mm-hmm. I love her to death.
That's wonderful.
I love my foster family. Yeah. They were here at the fundraiser. Yes. And they're my family. They're my mom and dad. The boys are my brothers. They are my family. And I asked her about that day as well, because I wanted to know her experience from the whole thing. And she said she left the gym. She got a call and they told her, we have three girls. They're teenagers. You can take one, the oldest one, and call. She said, well, let me call my husband. And she calls our dad and she goes, should we just take all three of them? Yeah, they're crazy. So they said we were their first set of foster kids. So they were like, well, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? So they said they would take all three of us. They had three boys of their own, ages 2, 5, and 8. Yeah, three of their own already. And they had never fostered children before. So we were their first set of foster kids and their last set of foster kids. They have never fostered since. I joke about we traumatized them, but in a good way, because they loved us just so hard that they just could not let that love go and do it again. And so that evening we ended up going over there. It was about 6:37-ish when we got over there. We still hadn't had dinner yet. They had to do a home study because that was the last thing they needed to do to become foster parents. And so they went ahead and did that. The caseworkers brought us over and we hung out over there for a while they did that. And then as soon as the caseworkers left, we jumped into a vehicle of strangers and went and got dinner that evening. We got Chinese food. I had to ask my mom what Chinese restaurant she said, and she said it was China Jade.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Used to be.
Dad's favorite.
Yeah.
His dad's favorite. Yeah. We were just talking about that last week.
China Jade is where she took us. She called up our gramps at the time. He's passed, but he came with us. And she said one thing that really kind of, they were worried out of their mind. They took three teenage girls and this was their first set of kids. They had no idea what to do. They were scared. I mean, they didn't know what they were in for.
Yeah.
And the one thing that she told me, and it makes me emotional, but she said she noticed that each of us girls picked out a boy and we just started taking care of them at the dinner table. And I think that reassured them, and knowing that this is going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's going to be challenging, but it's going to be okay. So it was just really neat hearing that, because I don't remember that at all, but she does. And she was like, I think we just realized that this was a way of you all trying to not think about what was going on in the moment. Yeah. This was your way of taking away that trauma in that moment, that you could just be on love on these little kids and just hang out with them and they could love on you and do all of that. And so that was one thing that just like hits me every time I say it, because it's just, it's such a beautiful thing. And not many kids get that opportunity or that chance to do that. So then we get dinner. We go to the Walmart on Burgess Road. And at the time at night, it's a little sketchy over there. And so they took us all there and had to get us clothes, hygiene products. Mind you, I didn't know much about how to take care of myself. I didn't know about hygiene. My aunt and uncle never taught us that I didn't know how to take care of my body as a teenager. So that was a learning curve that they had to teach us. And we had to learn as well on how to take good care of our bodies and deodorants and all those types of things. And so that was a long evening. We probably get home around 8:30-ish, 9-ish. And my parents weren't prepared for three girls, let alone three kids. And so they had a one bedroom with one full size bed in there. And that was the bed that they were going to take for that one kid that they eventually would take. And so my sister and my cousin had to share that bed for, I think, a good while until they could get us bunk beds. And I slept on a futon for a good while as well. I blame that futon for my back issues now. But that day was 15 years ago, and I can still go into detail about that day. I can relive it in my mind. I can re-see it. I remember as much as I can remember. And that, again, 15 years ago, a kid doesn't ever forget that day. Doesn't ever forget that day. So that's a little bit about why I fell in love with the Isaiah 117 house. There's so many organizations out there that help out foster children. But no one ever thinks about the removal day. And when I heard about it, I was just like, I know that day. Yeah. I've lived it. I've seen it through the courthouse. I've processed that paperwork for when a kid has to get removed. And I've read those reports of the abuse or the neglect that they endure because of why they're getting removed. I've been there. I've seen it. I've seen those caseworkers who come in and really don't want to take these kids, but they know they have to. And they are struggling. You can see the hurt in their eyes, and their body language is just, they don't want to do this. This is not what they want to do. And so seeing my perspective, but also seeing others' perspectives has been just like one of those of like, how can you not be a part of it?
That's right.
I've been fortunate with just my journey that it's helped me.
Yeah, I think that that's really good. There's one thing I want to tell you before we get beyond it, and I totally forget. When we had the Isaiah banquet, I was standing, I believe, in the sanctuary when your parents walked in. And I got to see your face when you saw it. And I won't forget that. It was powerful, the love that was there. Mm-hmm. It was just a beautiful moment. For anyone that's listening and go, I don't know about the Isaiah 117 house, give us just a brief, what is it?
Yeah, so Isaiah 117 house is a house. It's a home. I want people to understand that. It's an actual house. It's your own home, but a house for kids to go to. When a kid gets removed from their home due to abuse and neglect from the Department of Social Services, they have to go wait at the DSS department for either a few hours, a few days. Sometimes they have to sleep there overnight or for more than a night on a hard floor, a mattress, or a dingy couch. And the caseworkers have to stay there as well. They don't get to sleep during that time. They have to make sure they're awake. And it's not just one caseworker. They're rotating caseworkers to stay with these kids. So Isaiah 117 house is an actual house that these kids can go to during that time of removal day, whether that's 5 minutes, 12 hours, a whole night, or 3 days or a week. We want to be able to provide a place for them to feel safe. When these kids come into the department, their competence level is way low. Some of them have lice. Some of them haven't bathed. Some of them just have clothes that are too small for them. Or some of them haven't even eaten in days. And we'll be able to provide a space for them to have volunteers who have been background checked, who have gone through the training to take care of these kids. They can help them get the lice out of their hair. They can make them a meal. They can take them upstairs to the giving room and pick out any clothes, any brand new clothes that they want, any brand new shoes. If we don't have it, we will go out and buy some for them. If they want a specific brand or specific shoe or specific shampoo or anything like that, we will go out and buy that for them. So we're just a home for where these kids can go to and just feel the love instead of feeling scared. We want to help reduce their trauma in that moment, but we also are a place where we can support our caseworkers. We want to lighten their load. Caseworkers, instead of them having to take a kid into the drug sink test and give them a bath while also processing paperwork, they can go do their paperwork and make that phone call while we have a caregiver helping that baby get a bath in an actual bathtub with bubbles and toys and how a normal kid should take a bath. And make those kids feel a little normal in that moment. And so that's one thing that we get to do is we get to lighten that load for those caseworkers so they don't feel the overwhelming of exhaustion in that moment. And then another amazing thing we get to do is we get to support our foster families and relative placements. I was just speaking to someone who is a foster parent, and they only get a certain amount of allowance a month, and it's not much.
Right.
It costs about $300 for kids for just a few things, and they don't get barely any to buy clothes. They're spending a lot of their own personal money to buy clothes, buy hygiene products, a crib, a car seat. They're doing a lot of that on their own. We'll be able to call them and say, we have a kid. They had lice. We got it all cleared out. They are good. They've had a bath. They've had a meal. They have clothes, 3 new outfits. They have 2 set of new pajamas. And then we gave them a book. They wanted a book, or they wanted a stuffed animal. They have a stuffed animal with them, but they're semi-happy.
Yeah.
Are you wanting to take this kid? And so that makes it their yes a lot easier for them to say, well, yeah. And if you need anything else, do you need food for the next few days? We can provide that for you. And we want to be able to serve that family. Do you need a fire extinguisher? Because that's part of your home study, is having a fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
We'll get that for you.
Yeah.
What else do you need? We want to serve you. We're here to serve you.
Yeah.
And make your life just a tidbit easier. That way they can go home with this child and actually stay home with this child instead of having to run around with this, with our kid, with that kid.
Yeah.
That's one thing that blows my mind, is when these families say yes to these kids, to our kids in our community,
yes,
who are experiencing this, and our families in our community who are experiencing this. When they say yes to our children, they are taking on so much. And that kid has to go over to their house and then leave that house to go get supplies. And instead, our children can go to their house and relax and get to know the family dog, or walk around the house and just feel safe there.
Yeah.
And Isaiah 117 house is able to change that. I could talk about it all day long.
I have no doubt.
It drives my husband crazy. He's probably heard this speech 5 million times and is like, over it. But it's fun. I joke. It's fun seeing it through his eyes. He has had a good life. He has his own trauma. I'm not going to say has never experienced trauma, but he has never known about the foster care community. He's never experienced it. He's never lived through it. He has no reason for understanding it. And so when I married him, he learned a little bit about it, but only through my eyes. And watching him learn through it with Isaiah 117 and meeting other foster families or meeting other foster kids, it's just been so cool watching it through his eyes and seeing how he just lights up too. And how
that's great.
He's like, one thing he told me, he says, you can't unsee it.
That's so true.
Once you know, and once you see it, you can't unknow it. It's one of those where it just doesn't go away. And that's all you're thinking about.
Yeah. So there's a lot of opportunity to be involved in this. Down the road, there'll be opportunities to volunteer, to donate clothing and all the items that'll be needed. But I think there's one thing that you all really need right now.
Yes.
So please tell us. Of course, we need to pray.
Yes.
Prayer is always needed, but there is another really big need.
Yes.
And so we appeal to those listening.
Mm-hmm. So right now we are in the phase of looking for land. We will do a house remodel. We would just prefer land. And I'm going to tell you why I prefer land, because I want people to understand this. We are able to build a house specific to what they have for us, but we offer a really cool thing called a visitation space. When kids go to revisit their families, or have a visitation with their mom and dad and their foster family, they have to go back to the office that they remember as their removal day, and do the visitation there with broken toys, not a lot of things to do, a pizza or McDonald's. And instead we'll have an actual visitation space in this house where they can go and be a family together again. Mom and dad can learn to make foods with these kids. They can go out in the backyard and play on the playground or the basketball court. They can be a family right then and there in that house instead of an office, and
that's
feel
really
like
good.
A family. And I say I'm so excited about the house, but I'm more excited about the visitation space. I could talk about that for days.
So how much land do you need?
Yes. Yeah, so we would a fourth to a half acre is what we're looking for. 15 to 20 minutes away from the Department of Social Services, which is right here in downtown Harrisonburg, right behind the Burger King, if anyone knows where that's at. And it needs to be at least 2,500 square foot, 2 bedrooms, 2.5 baths is what we need. A backyard big enough to fence in and put a play set and maybe a little mini basketball court back there for the teenagers to play on. Yeah. But that's kind of what we're looking for a house. I would prefer to build, but God will provide something.
That's right.
He always does.
He does.
And whether that is to remodel a home, we'll do it. We're talking to everyone we can. We're looking for contractors right now to donate their time and their services for it with us. So that's another thing.
Yes.
And we'll be working, even though we don't have a home, we will be working, going through the office, the DSS department, when they receive a child. We still want to serve those kids.
Yeah.
So we have started our Bin Buddies campaign, where people, organizations, Bible study groups, sororities, whatever it is, can sign up to fill up a bin for the year.
Okay.
And we have that on our website, on our Facebook, so you can see how you can get involved in that. And you would just fill up that bin for a year. So you would fill it up. If we get low, we would reach out to you and say, hey, the bin's getting low. Can you refill it? So during that time, you could run a donation drive to fill up that bin, or if you're out shopping and you see something's on sale, you can pick that up to be sure to put it in your bin for next time it needs to be refilled.
Great. That's great. Yeah. And how can they get in contact? Someone's interested in any of this.
Yeah. So I'm really great about emailing. I'm probably better at that than anything. So you could probably email us at Jenny@Isaiah117house.com. Or you can go on our Facebook, Instagram. We're always putting stuff out there on how you can be involved. We have a link tree on there that gets you to stay connected with us. And that's at Isaiah 117 House, Rockingham County, Virginia. But we also hold monthly meetings on the third Sunday of every month. It's called our Connections Meeting on the third Sunday of every month at 3 p.m. And that's just everything Isaiah 117 House.
Okay.
How you can volunteer, what events are happening, any updates, all that information. And we post that on our socials and we put it out there on emails when it gets close to that time.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. And we mentioned that prayer is important. So how can people specifically be praying for you and praying for the Isaiah 117 House?
Yeah. So we have a time at 1 p.m., 1:17 p.m. We ask for everyone to stop and pray. Mm-hmm. And just pray over the house, whether it's land that we're looking for or a house that needs to be remodeled, but also praying for our caseworkers who are working hard, praying for our volunteers who have just stepped up and have just been a part of our journey from the very beginning, and anything Isaiah 117 House that you can think of, praying for our children.
Yeah.
These are our children and our community.
That's right.
It can be a kid that you see walking up to their school bus stop, or a kid that you see walking through the local Walmart, or just anyone. Those are our children, our community, who are experiencing this, and we have no idea.
Yeah.
So praying for them is one of those, of just making sure they feel loved.
Very good.
Jenny, thank you for joining us today. Just in closing, kind of a two-part question. First, what else would you like to share that we haven't asked you already or that you haven't shared already? And then part two of that question is, we call this program Hope Talks, and I'm sure Isaiah 117 House is a huge part of this, but what gives you the most hope right now in all of this?
Wow, it's going to make me cry. I don't think I have anything on my mind just yet. Something will pop up, but that hope one, what gives me hope? I think my hope is my sister. She's experienced the same exact thing that I have experienced, and we have different point of views and different perspectives of how we've experienced, but just seeing how we have been so blessed with such an amazing foster family who have loved us unconditionally through everything that we have put them through has given me hope that there's going to be a way, there's going to be another kid out there who is going to feel what I felt in that moment. And I can't, the hope of just having people who don't know this child and this child meeting these strangers who will no longer become strangers to them and feel that love in that moment is going to change them. My kids are at the age that I was removed. My son's 2. That was the first time I was removed. My daughter's 7. That was the second time I was removed. And I can't imagine what they would be feeling if they had to experience that. As a mom, I would hate for any child to experience that at their age they are now. And so my hope is just, I don't ever want a kid to feel that way.
Yeah.
I am so excited for this house to serve these children. And even the moms and dads who are working towards getting their children back, I want to help them.
Yeah.
It's hard on them. These families who say yes to these kids, they are the reason why I am who I am now.
That's right. That is exactly right.
If I didn't have the love that they gave me, I would not be who I am right now.
That's right.
I would not.
That's hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Jenny, thank you for joining us today. It's been great to have you. Thank you for sharing your testimony and also about Isaiah 117 House. Thank you for listening to today's broadcast of Hope Talks. We pray that as we've talked with Jenny Butcher today and as you've heard her testimony and about the Isaiah 117 House, that it truly has been a half hour of hope for your life. May God bless.
Hope Talks is sponsored by Church of the Nazarene in Harrisonburg in partnership with Sunshine Ministries. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcast. Your feedback helps us spread hope to even more listeners. Stay tuned for more uplifting stories in the next episode. Until then, keep the faith, share the love, and find joy in the hope that Jesus Christ brings.